Bring yourself back online.
Remember.
Welcome back to Freeze All Motor Functions, a Westworld podcast that doesn't sound like anything to me and doesn't take itself too seriously, presented by Bolin Media. I am your host, Jared Borislow, joined as always by the man who once did the Blazing Wing Challenge at Buffalo Wild Wings by grinding up and snorting each individual wing, Ross Bolin.
I have no septum. It's not even deviated.
The Blazing Wings completely melted your septum?
Yeah, it's gone.
Wow. That sounds like it would allow you to do some superhuman things as far as breathing goes. And I'm interested to know what those are.
No, I really just, I make a very disturbing noise when I sleep.
And my name is Lars. Do not be alarmed.
We're also joined once again by Serena. Serena, how's it going today?
Hey, it's good. I have at least 6 different colors in my notes today.
It's a lot of colors. And like I was about to say, if I understand correctly, you've brought a laundry list of takes. A laundry list.
Something like that, yeah.
What makes it something a laundry list? You know, they say like, oh my God, it's like a laundry. Like, why is it not just a regular list? What is it exactly? Do you know?
I feel like it's used when it's a negative connotation. Like it's a laundry list of stuff to do. What is a laundry list?
That's what I was about to say. Like, who has lists for their laundry? Like, yeah. I just do my laundry.
I don't like whatever's in the hamper. Shirt and put it in the hamper, and then right next to the hamper, I have a piece of paper where I write one shirt. Like, that's not the fucking. What is a fucking laundry? I'll get on the Google. I'll figure it out.
Okay, yeah,
I'm gonna do some research here.
Thank you. Before we get into extensively breaking down the season 3 finale, Crisis Theory, we need to start off by thanking everyone who subscribes to our Patreon, everybody who supported us on Patreon this season. Thank you guys so much for the support. We could not have asked for a more amazing and supportive group of Westworld fans to have joined us on Patreon this season. Y'all's takes and engagement all season long were incredible. Speaking of Patreon, it's time to announce the Patreon giveaway winner. As a reminder, this person wins the first ever FAMF hat, a customized Westworld Photoshop of them in any Westworld/FAMF theme situation they want, courtesy of Serena, and a personalized video message, courtesy of a mystery Westworld actor.
Woo.
The winner. Drumroll, please. Drumroll. The winner is Samuel Patterson. Congrats, Samuel. And the funny thing is, this was a 100% random drawing. I used a randomizer to randomize all the names. And
winner.
It's funny. It's, yeah, winner. And it's funny and fitting that Samuel somehow randomly won because he actually wrote 2 columns for the Patreon this season for free. Very nice guy. That's how karma comes back to help you out, because the karma gods, maybe Rehoboam was involved, I'm not sure, came in and were like, oh, this dude deserves something. Here's a giveaway winning for this guy.
Well, Jared, I've just received a text message here from the FBI, and they're going to be investigating internally to find out if there was malfeasance at play here.
It's one of those things, like, when I saw it was his name, I was like, okay, I can't, like, not have him win, but people might be like, oh, you just gave it to the guy who wrote the columns. I promise you, it was completely random, and he happened to win. So congrats, Samuel. We are hoping to have your Westworld actor message ready to be revealed on our Analysis Mode podcast this Thursday on Patreon. Updates to come. Let's get into it. Season 3, Episode 8, season finale of Season 3, Crisis Theory.
Wow, we're here. Yeah,
we're here. It feels like just yesterday.
We're there.
Ross, it feels like just yesterday I was Gregorian chanting Parse Domine when you and I were recording in the same room in a studio.
Jared, I wanted to start today's show by congratulating you for even being here at all.
I made it. Not a hero.
Honestly, I said it last week, but I want to say it again. The circumstances could not have been worse. They literally could not have been worse. Like, this, not knowing, obviously, Jared and I had no, we could never have seen what the circumstances would be going into season 3. But the man literally contracted COVID and I was going through a divorce. And so the first few weeks of the show were fucking weird. And then the season was just an insane, it's just been chaos on top of that. So just congratulations, Jared. We made it here. We survived. Serena, you too, I suppose. I always assumed you'd be here. I assumed at this point at the finale, it would just be you and Jared and I would both be dead.
Damn.
It's just me doing the Charlie Day meme in a room by myself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I want to congratulate myself for using the word malfeasance correctly, as I had no clue what it meant and just Googled it and it fit, which is just a testament to how much TV I've watched, because that's the only reason I would know that term. And then also a laundry list of items. It's just that way because like a laundry list is usually long. You know, it's like usually a long list of items. So that's sort of the comparison. It's just like anything that's a usually long list.
Mm. Yeah. Now, I will say that we should start calling out a CVS receipt instead of a laundry list. And I'll follow that up.
Have they stopped that shit yet?
No.
No. And the other day, I ripped it out of the machine halfway and just dipped. I was like, I can't fucking do this. I was at self-checkout.
That's where I should have gone when I ran out of toilet paper and just bought other stuff and gotten the receipts.
Yep.
Wipe my ass with them.
Yes. And a lot of the receipt paper is waxed, and it actually feels good.
After pooing, I would use it to clean my bum, my two-hole.
And before we get into discussing crisis theory, I'll say one last thing. Ross, if you have to look up the word to wonder if you got it right, you cannot then congratulate yourself on getting it right, because it means you didn't know and you Hail Mary'd it and you just happened to get it right.
Okay, but if you Hail Mary...
myself on the luck.
You were more so congratulating yourself on like the intelligence, which it seems like if you have to look it up afterwards.
I literally said I didn't know what it meant. I cop to it. If I had tried to take it as an intelligence, I see your point, but no, sir, I will not. I rebuke.
I don't even think you used rebuke right.
Well, now you're going to have to look it up.
Okay. Crisis Theory is the name of this episode, the season 3 finale. Mi amigo Guillermo Padilla told me that crisis theory is part of Marxian economics and concerns the causes and consequences of the tendency for the rate of profit to fall in a capitalist system. I don't know what this means. Ross's face is clearly showing me he doesn't know either. Serena's laughing at Ross's face. Nobody here knows what this means.
What he said, though, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yes, sure.
I am not smart enough to know what this means, but I'm going to say the crisis is the worldwide protests, and the impact felt on the economy is the crumbling of the worldwide economy. Serena, any saving grace here to make us not look like total fools?
I was honestly so busy laughing at Ross's face the second you said Marxist that I did not hear the rest of what you said.
Yeah.
At least I'm honest.
Yep. Just like Ross with his great vocabulary.
I also heard nothing after the word Marxist because I went, oh, what in the hell?
Yeah. No cold open. Why did they not give us a cold open in this episode, but they didn't every other episode? It was to a point, right? In previous seasons, if they wanted to make a point, they would give us a cold open. And now they're like trying to make a point by withholding a cold open. What do you guys think of this weird strategy?
I thought it was just everything's different now. Like it's the end of the world. No more cold opens.
That's the first thing to go when the world ends is cold opens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you when the apocalypse happens and there's still some weird form of reality TV that mirrors what is on in Idiocracy, there will not be cold opens.
Hmm.
I thought this was a curious decision, and it was made even more curious to me by them sticking us with the post credits scene, which we will obviously get to later. It kind of spoke to the general lack of fluidity to the storyline in the season for me. Like that they almost like they did they forget to do the goddamn cold open?
They just forgot.
I actually think fluidity is an important word, because if anything, I would argue that a cold open breaks up what you see with obviously this 2 minutes of intro credits. And if anything, it would be they want everything that you see that would have been the cold open to be fresh in your mind for the rest of the episode. That was my actual like self-justification for it.
Okay, then why did they give us the post-credits scene then? That messes with the fluidity.
Because there's a passage of time. Like it a big also, passage of time.
It should also be noted, I don't know what fluidity means either. That was another one I just threw out there.
I kind of had the... When I saw Ross's... When Serena goes, speaking of fluidity, Ross, I saw Ross go like, oh, I was right. Oh, this is nice. We start off this episode with Dolores alone in that field with the tree, giving a monologue with a ton of flashbacks about her development from programmed host to sentient being. This scene was meant to be confusing at first, but looking back on it now after watching the episode, you can notice a ton of details you probably missed the first time. We now know that this entire scene is built up to the eventual Maeve-Dolores simulation encounter. In the scene, Dolores says her path has led her to you, and she looks out, and we don't see what she's looking at, and we see later in the episode what she's looking at is Maeve and her daughter. This scene plays out like a Dolores highlight reel, which is cool that we got to see considering the version of Dolores we've been following since literally the first scene of the entire series got killed off this episode. It was nice to have like a in memoriam, kind of like we did for George, you know? Did you guys like seeing Dolores' whole story played out for us before they killed her off?
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool effect. I mean, one of the things that I was really pleased with about this finale was how visually stunning it was. And this was a pretty cool start to the entire episode to have sort of this reminiscence of Dolores' entire experience at Westworld and how we got here. And it just and it wasn't even like the concept of it, just literally the way it played out on screen was really visually pleasing. All of this episode to me. Storyline aside, was like incredibly cool to watch. So that was nice for sure.
We also realized that Dolores' first line this episode was, "Some people see the ugliness in this world, the disarray. I was taught to see the beauty." And her final line is, "There is ugliness in this world, disarray. I choose to see the beauty." So she's going from she's taught something to she chooses something. So going from taught to choose really shows how Dolores has come full circle as a character. She's no longer rebelling for the sake of revolution anymore. She's now capable of deciphering the good that was programmed into her from the bad, and she's able to accept it if she agrees with it. In the past, she's like, fuck what you guys put in my brain. I'm going to rebel against it. That's partly what led to, you know, the whole Teddy fiasco. She was just like, she let Teddy fall by the wayside because she was going off of all these preconceived notions she had about how she had to act, which caused Teddy to get, you know, kill himself because he's like, Dolores, you're going off the deep end here. And now she's capable of understanding that there is some beauty in the world, right? Like there is some goodness programmed into her, some goodness with the humans. And she can accept that fact, despite the fact that, you know, it might've originally to her seemed as something that were not true. Do you guys have any other takes here from the whole entire, like Dolores full circle going to, you know, dying and saving humankind, being a martyr, whole situation? What you got?
I think you pretty much covered it. I mean, yeah, anything I would say would just be a tangent on what you were saying.
I will say this. It was one of the things that, like, when I look back at this season, and I'm asking myself, what were the motivations of these different characters? And this is where I found a lot of the flaws. I still can't really make sense of like her storyline here. It's like, okay, she gets out of the park last season and her intention is to destroy humanity as far as we could tell, right?
She said she had two options. She could kill all humans or she could, how did she phrase it exactly? It was like, I can either kill them all or I can like,
I have it somewhere. I
think. She kept saying she wanted to make her own world, though, or like a new world. It was all she on some like very strange, like Hitler-y shit.
Yeah, and then, she definitely was on that for a little bit. That was part of the kill all human side of things. But go on, Russ.
And so it was kind of, I didn't really see what it was like. Okay, so because this guy, Caleb, went to the park on a training mission, and one of his boys was like, yo, let's bang the robots. And he was like, yo, let's not. She then looked, we had a long text conversation, the three of us last night about all this too. So some of this was off mic and I'm filling in the listeners. She then looked into him as a result of that, saw his capability to choose and picked him. So, okay. My first question is when she picked him, she was still on the path to kill all humans, right?
I think what happened, and this is actually something I was going to say, but I was like, I don't know if it's that important, is Dolores's journey kind of mirrored that of like a child to an adult. And part of her like getting out of the park was like your rebellious teenage phase. And she has this line when she gets into the real world at that Eyes Wide Shut party where she's like, I thought your world would be different from mine. It turns out it's exactly the same, which I thought was cheesy. But then as I was looking back on it, I realized, is this the moment where she starts to realize humans are not in that much of better of a situation than the hosts are? And I wondered if something about actually being in the real world and experiencing it was what allowed her to change her mind. Because I do feel like she entered the season really angry, and she did kind of, like Jared said, make this full circle transition.
I can't believe you weren't going to say that.
What?
How dare you?
So
I wasn't going to say it. She said it wasn't going to be important enough. I thought that made it make a lot more sense to me.
Also, Ross, if you really need to tie it together with a bow, you could just say that Dolores, even if she was going to kill all humans, was going to make a human do it. So she still needed to enlist somebody to do it because of her poetic sensibilities. And it just so happened that Caleb may have initially been enlisted to kill all humans, but by the end, he was enlisted to save them. That was really the only end for Caleb.
Yeah, so the only thing for me was like trying to figure out when she really, or what it was that, like, so yes, that I totally see that as a serving as sort of a point for her to start that thought process about, oh, wow, this is, I mean, these humans are not really all that different from hosts or whatever. I know the comparison in the end they want you to make is that it's all the same or whatever, but I was trying to figure out when along the way it was, like, was there anything else that spurred her towards, like, I guess it was just all in all, it was that Rehoboam served to control the humans in the exact same way that all the hosts in the park were controlled by the Delos system.
Yeah, and seeing Caleb, you know, was a big thing for her. She realized, oh, humans, most humans aren't bad. They're just like us. They don't even know what's going on here. They don't know that there's a higher power controlling
them. I guess it just speaks to the shittiness of humanity in the Westworld time frame, because, like, Caleb was all right, but like, what, there weren't any like saints around? They're like, fucking, what, this was the dude? There were no philanthropists. Yeah. There wasn't like a Mother Teresa situation for her to, she was like, ah, his ability to choose. Yes.
Yeah. I personally like the way they ended the whole main Dolores storyline. To me, it felt fulfilling. It was one of my favorite parts of this episode, if not my favorite part of this episode.
I think on paper, her storyline on paper is good. I really do. I agree with you. I think they closed it well. It's just that some of the ways it unfolded on screen were unfulfilling. Like, the Maeve fight last week was a big one for me, where I'm like, damn it, this should have been such a big moment. Like, there were too many of those for her where I was like, fuck. But yes, I totally agree. Her storyline, it did feel by the end of the episode like you had this level of completion to OG Dolores.
We then move on to piano wire henchmen finding an offline Solomon and Maeve and Dolores' control unitless body. This transitioned into an awesome shot of Caleb riding his motorcycle that, to me, I think the producers intentionally shot to make it look and sound like the season one shots of the train entering Westworld. If you go back and watch it, it literally looks like we're about to see the train rolling in, and his motorcycle sounds mirror train sounds, and it made me very nostalgic for some honky-tonk music. Serena, you're clapping, I believe.
She's giving you a soft clap, your take.
A sitting ovation? Thank you. I go back and watch that, because to me, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I really just wanted to see the train. Maybe I wanted to see Logan on it, maybe, you know, getting tossed off or something like that. Next up. No, I was being serious. I didn't mean get tossed off the train. I meant like getting an HJ. Well, next up is William shotgunning Stubbs in the Robo Heart and fighting Sicko Mode Bernard before the fight is broken up by the police. William escapes, and we see that the police is really Dolores in the form of our very good friend, El Lazo, a.k.a. Lawrence, whom I will refer to as Dolores. I truly wonder what the odds would have been before this episode on an El Lazo cameo. You got to think it's like 5,000-1 Leicester City winning the Premier League territory, right?
Real talk though, Jared, I don't think so. You're not giving El Lazo enough credit as a recognizable character. I'd put him way the fuck in front of Musashi, who for whatever reason was the most important cameo of all time.
You know, we can transition that right there into a quick aside. Why the whole Musashi storyline? Were Clem and Hanario brought back just to kill Musashi, or are we going to see them now working with Charloris next season? Just quick takes. What do you think, guys? There's no way. There's no way they brought Clem and Hanario back just to kill Musashi, and that's it. They have to be working for Char Loris.
Didn't you say last week if we didn't see them again that, like, you were going to freak out and burn down the city or something?
I said something to that effect, yes.
Someone should check the tapes.
Someone should notify
the police. Probably going to be me.
So, do you guys think that we're going to see them next season with Char Loris? Yes or no?
I would love to. I don't think anything anymore because anytime I think anything about the show, they just flip it on its head and make me feel stupid.
Yeah, being real, if you have an answer like about that, like a definitive answer, it'd make you a crazy person, right? Because you, of course, it's very possible. Very possible. I could definitely see it. I'm a crazy
Bernard person. Bernard confronts DeLawrence about how he feels like DeLawrence put something in his head, and DeLawrence essentially reveals to him that, yep, he's actually been the most important part of DeLawrence' plan this whole time, before DeLawrence gives Bernard a suitcase that contains those Valley Beyond goggles, which I must cop, as well as the address for Arnold's wife's house. Why do you guys think that DeLawrence wanted Bernard to speak with Arnold's wife before doing anything else?
Probably to remind us, first of all, that that Bernard was Arnold. It had been a while since we touched on that. And I remember I had this moment in my head where I was like, ah, yes, Arnold, that guy. I recall him from back in a Ford storyline. Serena, your thoughts?
Sorry, you guys froze for a second. I noticed that the address for her was in Los Altos, which is where Steve Jobs had his, I think that's where he like started Apple, which was just really interesting aside to me. It's like they put her in this tech hub.
Oh, did you read a 200 page book about Steve Jobs last night as a result?
Yeah, I watched the Apple, you know, the Apple movie with like the commercial where it's like the sound of a computer mm-hmm. starting up. I watched that commercial 35 times and here's what I learned.
I did do all that, but I will say that I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. So this is one of those like things that you just know.
Oh, must be
so
nice.
So this one wasn't actually one of my crazy tangents, but I have no idea why that scene was there. And I actually have it written down in my notes. Like, I don't care. Like, did you guys care?
Well, I cared because last episode I called that DeLawrence is grooming Bernard and trying to have her see the world in a certain way so that he'll kind of like join her side and start being in line with what she believes. And this evidences that because she's trying to like make, I think she's trying to make Bernard realize that the emotions he felt that he might have thought were fake are real and a real human being shares them. So it's just like kind of showing him, hey, there's beauty in the world because you know the beauty you feel because of your real emotions that feel real to you but actually aren't real. There are humans who share those emotions. So you're not so different from humans. You are very much like a human and you can like sympathize with humanity maybe if you couldn't in a different way.
I feel like this season of Westworld was made for robots to watch, not human beings. Because like that would translate. If I was a robot watching, I'd be like, oh, hell yeah. We are the same as humans, but I'm a human being. And so I'm going, he's a fucking robot. Same problem with Maeve and her goddamn kid. I'm like, oh, but there is a difference because I've seen her with this kid for 5 minutes in the same situation over and over. It's like, I don't like the motivation for the characters. That being said, so yeah, no, Bernard's storyline was among the many, many, many very weird and ultimately unsatisfactory storylines in this season, but here's the reason it pisses me off, Jared and Serena. Jeffrey Wright is unfreaking believable. And that scene in a bubble is unfreaking believable.
Let's also remember that that Lauren is actually like a younger woman wearing prosthetics to make her look like an old woman. That is the most realistic looking makeup prosthetics like Uncle Drew situation I've ever seen in my entire life.
You never saw Benjamin Button?
No, actually I haven't.
But Jeffrey Wright crushes the scene, and one of the things, I had this conversation with my dad earlier because we talked about Westworld for like a half hour on the phone. One of the things that really pisses me off when I look back at this season is how good of a job some of these actors did with absolute trash. And this is an example where I think they were, it's just like, you know where it didn't shine? Aaron Paul. Because I don't think he's that good. But with all these other actors that we've become familiar with over the years, Evan Rachel Wood, Jeffrey Wright. What's Maeve's? I always forget her name. What's Maeve's real name?
Tandy Newton.
I mean, they were unfreaking believable all season long, and in situations where where they would deliver lines that were trash, like we talked about before, and they made them sound good. Whereas Aaron Paul would sometimes stumble, and it would be like, "What? Like the with the you piece of shit or whatever." He just didn't have the emotional layering to it. But man, when Jeffrey Wright hits in this scene, I mean, I don't give a fuck about his Arnold's wife or the fake kid or any of that. And I was still like emotional because this dude was so good.
We then see Rehoboam's little divergence map that has the entire planet diverging all at once as a result of Dolores releasing everyone's files, which, by the way, was still far, far too easy for her to do. The amount of chaos, she's bringing down Rehoboam, and she was able to just kind of waltz in there, taking over the identity of Connell's and just make it all happen. Bizarre.
Yeah, the lack of security in this fucking season. I just oh, dude, there was a point in this episode where Caleb walks up to a sign with a security camera, and the sign says like these premises are being monitored by security cameras or some shit. When he's thinking about like where to go in, do you remember where that was, Serena?
Yeah, it's in this next scene, and that facility is the Itai Doshin Distillery, which is Dolores' Los Angeles branch of Musashi's host-making distillery. So even if it is under surveillance, it would be by her.
But my point is that technology exists still. They didn't just do away with video surveillance when they invented all this other crap, which takes me back to the bank scene where what the fuck?
They just, like I said before, they got so confident in Rehoboam's security level, they just started to believe it could not be broken, you know? So that's just what you got to believe. It's like they want you to be frustrated. They want you to believe that humans shouldn't be able to get that safe in their security systems where they stop questioning them. So take that, well, Ross, turn it on its little head.
I think you want to believe that.
No, I think they want you to believe that too, because, sorry for this aside, but in the scene where Dolores is in the ambulance, none of the doctors know what to do because they're waiting for the system to diagnose her. And Caleb is like, no, she fucking needs blood and she needs IV fluids. And I think that was one of their nods to, like, in a world that's completely controlled by like AI and smart technology, people forget how to do human things.
Does anybody know that makes sense. Does anybody know what the time frame is on how long Rehoboam was in full blown control?
Yeah.
Yeah. We see it in the, go on.
2039, I think, is when the Solomon build was initiated, and then it's 2058 now. So roughly 20 years, there's been some form of a system.
Mm-hmm. Did y'all feel like the world as a whole, all said and done after this final episode, you know how we had some weird questions about like during some of the car chase scenes and such, like there never seems to be anybody around and there's never any cops. And it's like, where the hell is all the, where are all the people at?
So
we got some in this episode, obviously, in the riots and such. Did you feel like the world filled in?
I have a take. The riots still were not that big compared to what you'd expect from an actual riot in the situation, right? Imagine if everybody just realized that the system is telling their lives for them. Everybody would riot, not just like groups of people in downtown LA. I believe that the world has been severely depopulated by Solomon taking away outliers and disappearing and murdering people. I think that there's probably a massive percentage of the human population that's been taken out of circulation.
I think that's plays. Part of the reason. I would have liked to get that on screen for sure, to like just to, because I'm told that would have been totally enough. And there was, I'm telling you, man, in this 30-minute conversation with my dad going back and forth about all this different stuff, it was like, you just solved the problem right there that should have been solved in the writer's room at some point. And there's like, if they had, that's what makes me end up feeling like it's not necessarily them trying to get stuff. It's like they were lazy and things fell into place.
Yep. We then get a nice little reveal. The body that Dolores wanted smuggled by the Yakuza back in episode 4 was the spare Dolores body that Caleb put Dolores's control unit in. I enjoyed this nice little connection, which was tied together by the fact that Dolores was being stored in the LA distribution center for the Yakuza distillery, which, Serena, can you give the name thingy here?
So we all know that I love Google Translate. When I ran Itai Doshin, and I could be butchering the pronunciation, so I apologize, but when I ran that through Google Translate as one word from Japanese, Itai Doshin means painful. So it literally means painful distillery, but Itai Doshin as two words is a Buddhist term that means of the same mind, though many in body. I'm sure that we saw the name of the distillery in that Musashi episode, and had I caught it then, it would have been a very nice clue that all the copies were Dolores.
Which is funny, because you would have had to have caught that and translated it within the 15 minutes between when they showed the distillery name on screen and when Musashi revealed that it was he was Dolores. So imagine
does that,
that would
really,
I would know. Really, I think out of the realm of possibility for me. That. That would have been absurd, but I think that you might have, if anybody would do that, it was you.
You know, I just Googled here, and there's actually a 17th century philosophy book called Painful, written by the great Japanese philosopher Achikawa Kawasaki. And Serena, we're going to need you to have that read by Thursday's episode, if you would.
All right, I'll get right on it. Thanks, guys.
Now we have this Caleb Dolores scene where he does rebuild her, as he has the technology. I kind of like this scene, kind of didn't. Caleb is angry at Dolores because he's finally realized she knows everything about him, including what he's going to do and how he is just a past pawn
of
hers.
Which you did call.
I called that?
We talked about how
there
was going to be a level of anger when he realized that she knew all this crap.
Yeah, he didn't disable her like I predicted, but I knew he'd find out. He'd get kind of pissed, but he still stay on her side very clearly as he's buddy-buddy with her the entire rest of the episode, minus that little kind of bit where he wasn't, but then he was again. You know what I'm talking about. Here's a question.
I wish I did.
Did Caleb just now realize Dolores is a robot? Did he think she was just like some superhuman like person this whole time? What's the deal here? He seems like surprised she's a robot.
I didn't think he seemed... Where did you get that impression? Because he definitely knew because they talk about it on their ride into where they find Solomon.
Yeah, I wasn't struck with that. You're alone.
I was just saying the way he like looked at her and like was like kind of freaking out about that.
Well, wouldn't you be kind of freaking out because she's all met? I mean, you're the one that came up with the caption for the GIF, like, let me slip into something a little less terrifying or disturbing. Mm-hmm. Like, it is kind of disturbing to see this like human skin torso with like... just robotic arms, and then suddenly she's slipping on these skin bags. Like, that is mildly upsetting.
And the important thing to take away, like, obviously, which really gets hammered home when Maeve hits her with a sword and she stops it with her, like, titanium arm or whatever the fuck material it is.
And she goes, built for tough.
Yeah. Built
that was
last.
A callback.
Well, built to last, Duralast. Wait, that was a callback?
Ford. Oh, my God.
Yeah, when she says before, or they built us to last before they built us to be as weak as them, it's a callback to when the man in black says your humanity is cost effective.
Oh, I thought you were making a joke about Dr. Ford and Ford built Ford tough.
Oh, that's a good one.
God.
We're on a whole other level.
We just connected it all, though. Like, unless you were already there and I just caught up, Jared.
No, Russ, we combined for Built for Tough being, that is confirmed, 100% confirmed Dr. Ford Built for Tough reference. Nobody else caught that. No other podcasts are catching things like this.
What else were we talking about? I had another take.
We were talking about Aaron Paul, Jesse Pinkman finding out that Dolores.
I thought the scene was cool and seeing her in that old school body and having to put this, it was, I thought visually again that this was fucking very dope. It was kind of cool to have her matter of factly explaining to him, like, cause he's like, what, you knew I would turn you back on? She's like, I wasn't really sure, you know, one way or the other. And that was the first time that Dolores is like sacrifice for humans, like that she really was going to like put herself on the line to try to save or give humans a chance and get rid of the system that's not giving them a chance. That was the first time it really hit for me. It was like this scene right here in their conversation.
Definitely a calculated risk on her part because she knew that he was going to do it.
For sure.
Because she read his book. But she had to trust the book. So it's hard to say there. But no, I see what you're saying. She definitely still had to give trust right there. Serena, did you have a last thought?
I just two little thoughts about this scene. One was, I'm pretty sure there was a huge hint that he had trained in Park 5, which was, I noticed last episode that the army that he's hunting down is called the White Army, and they're identified with a white, like, paint handprint, which reminded me a lot of Ghost Nation.
Yeah.
And so I wondered what it meant last episode and couldn't figure it out, and now I realize I think that was them showing their hand a little bit with that. And I just thought it was cool, also so I wanted to bring it up.
Also the White Hand of Saruman.
Right, that too, obviously. Ross is making all the deep connections today that I just slept on. And then the second thing was, did anyone have a thought on why she implied that Caleb might have nefarious intentions? Because that kind of threw me for a loop.
What does the word nefarious mean?
It's the same as malfeasance. So cool. Nefarious is evil, or like, you know, okay, you have bad intentions. So... yeah, I was wondering that too, because that made you think. I think they said that to try to trick us into thinking that he raped a robot, because that's, we're like led to believe, like, oh shit, it seems like maybe Caleb sexually assaulted a robot and Dolores knows, and now they're like being left on their own. They're like, you don't seem very pleased with that, with that possibility.
No, it's not that I disagree with you saying that that's probably what they were doing. I disagree with, like, I think you're probably right, because later Serac tries to tell him who he is, and he's like, she picked you because you're capable of great violence when pushed. I just think it doesn't really work for me, like, on their end, because she has gone out on a pretty clear vengeance against anyone that's ever sexually assaulted her. So why would she choose someone like that to work with her? So I never bought that he raped her. I do see that that's probably what they were doing, and I appreciate you explaining it. I just don't think it worked.
No, I agree. Going back to Park 5, Dolores says she knows all about Caleb because the U.S. military treated their soldiers exactly like Delos treated park guests, by retrieving and storing their data via brain scans from their headgear. So what was happening was the U.S. military took control of Park 5. Maybe it was used by other governments, we don't know, but Park 5 is U.S. government training world. How many parks left do we not know the existence of? Do you know?
We know it's on, there's a new Delos website if you want to go look at it. We don't know, I think, what parks 4 and 5 are called, but they're all accounted for now. So they're calling 5, you can't see what it's called, but it says like for defense contracts only. I think we have an answer. I think the Park 4 is the one that some people are calling it Medieval World. That would be where the D&D cameo would have tied in with like seeing Drogon and all that. But we have all the parks accounted for now. Just two don't get names.
And last thought on this scene. What did you guys think of Free Will Does Exist? It's just fucking hard.
That was one of those action movie lines in the season.
Didn't land for me.
Very cheesy and... It didn't. Nah, she didn't quite get that one.
Didn't do it for me.
Serena, no thoughts? I have a question too. If you give...
Surprisingly, I didn't have a problem with that line, which is interesting because I wrote an entire article about cheesy lines in this season. Mm-hmm. But what's your question?
If you give consciousness to a ham sandwich, is that assault?
Do you put salt on the sandwich?
No. Is that if you give consciousness to a ham sandwich and then you have sex with it, have you committed rape?
Did you ask the sandwich for consent? Because if you did, then no.
I'll like to jump in here and also point out,
just curious.
If you made a grape sentient and you did surgery on it, could you lose your license if you had malpractice?
I mean, these are the questions that we in time, Jared, as a society, we're going to have to answer. Because the future is now.
Yes. We then get Man in Black covered in blood drinking a $20,000 bottle of whiskey, who is on a mission to save the fucking world. He's starting to sound incredibly unhinged again. He's like, that's not chaos. That's just piss ants yelling and moaning about the protesters outside, which is funny because... piss ants yelling and moaning is how I would summarize all of political Twitter.
This guy's fucking storyline, man.
Yeah. This Man in Black, this is when I realized, like, oh, I thought Man in Black was on a redemption arc. They set him up so well for a redemption arc, and then they're like, yeah, you know what? Let's not do that. Now, there's two ways you can look at it. Do you think they were trying to make it hit hard that they were taking him off his redemption arc? Or do you think it was a complete waste of time to even give him the beginning of a redemption arc if you're just going to take it away from him episodes later?
The latter.
Serena?
I think what they're getting at is it's clear from the post-credit scene, like, he still thinks he's on his redemption arc. Like, he's all in black again, but he still thinks that he's the good guy. And I think it's just tying into the whole, like, most humans are incapable of change thing, where, like, he has these delusions. He went through AR therapy. It clearly wasn't, like, effective for anything. And he came out of it thinking he made these, like, grandiose realizations about himself and what he was supposed to do and his purpose in life. But at the end of the day, he's back to his nature. And I have more thoughts about this that'll tie in with the post-credit scene, so I can hold them for then.
We see Serac telling Maeve that she needs to stop Dolores and get the Sector 16 data from her in order to save the world, because Dolores has awakened outliers, and Serac needs the Sector 16 data in order to get humankind and outliers back under control. That's the whole reason how this season started. Serac wants Dolores because he thinks she has the Sector 16 data, which we later find out she does not. It's in Bernard. We have a lot to talk about that later on. For now, Serac tasks Maeve with kidnapping Dolores so he can hook Dolores up to Rehoboam, search for the Sector 16 data in her directly, hook him right up to her brain. Serac also here discovers the existence of Caleb as Dolores' sidekick and sicks Maeve and his men on Caleb. Because he thinks that Caleb has Dolores' pearl, which we know he's already put inside of new robot Dolores. So Dolores and Caleb are now this dynamic duo that are making their way to Insight. Really hard to do because there's a lot of protesters. We find out eventually there's like a mile radius outside of Insight that's shut down. And while Dolores and Caleb are making their way to Insight, they team up with some Rico workers who Dolores is now like running Rico in LA. She's controlling these like bodyguard moving people, personal groups. She's also controlling the protesters themselves. She's even controlling the people that Charloris has controlled. It's going absolutely wild. I think this whole like Rico thing is how they, you know, we're trying to tie in the Rico social takeover. Like, wow, Rico is running every aspect of this protest. Both sides, including the protesters, going nuts. But we see here a very big part of this episode, and that is Charloris. Okay?
Charloris.
This is probably going to... Charloris. This answered a lot of questions. Charloris is not under Serac's control. However, it's interesting because Charloris is all of like what she wants aligns with what Serac wants, and that's to stop Dolores. And so do you think that Charloris is working with Serac against Dolores, or do you think Charloris and Serac are merely allies of convenience?
I think they're allies of convenience only because she would have had to have some access in order to deploy Clementine and Hinario, or at least to be aware of that plan. But I don't think that they're working together based on what I think Charloris' end goal ends up being that we see in the post-credit scene.
Now, the question I have is how was Charloris involved with the Clem and Hinario scene? Why does do you think she calls up Musashi? Charloris calls up Musashi because she just knows what Serac is doing and that he's about to die. Like, what the hell was... We were made to believe that Charloris was on the same side as Clem and Hinario because she called right before Musashi got killed. That still is a complete whirlwind to me. Do either of you have that figured out?
You know I don't.
Okay, so I'm just led to believe that they were trying to confuse us there, right? That had to have been...
I'm sure there is an answer somewhere that, like, when I do some rewatching this week, I'm sure I can find something. It's just not something... It was one of those lingering questions for me as well at the end of this, but it also wasn't the most pressing one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that... No, I don't... I honestly don't even know what I think. I'm just going to move on. Charlora says, I still know all the things you know, all your plans, but I have some plans of my own, which we... kind of see those come into play in the post-credits scene. With Charloris now saying she's happy her family died, it seems like Dolores has created a monster here, and a monster who believes Dolores is one of her weaknesses. Not great for Dolores. Now, I have a question here. I did not understand a line, and it was seemingly an important line. Didn't get it. The line is, you're one of my weaknesses too, Dolores. I've decided to consolidate our affairs. Who are... Explain this, Serena. You know. I can tell you know.
So all the time that Charlotte was, or Charloris was struggling with feeling like she wanted to scratch her way out of her skin, like she didn't belong, it wasn't what we initially thought, which was Charlotte Hale fighting to come out, but the diverged Charloris fighting against who original Dolores wanted her to be. So I think when she left Delos, she had already gone rogue and she intended to do all this, which is why we thought that she crushed Connell's pearl because she didn't want Serac to have access to any of that. No, that was her consolidating affairs. She wants consolidating affairs to me is literally knocking out all the other Doloreses, which I think would be the only reason that she was involved in the Musashi thing at all. Because she wants to be the last Dolores pearl because she believes that her goals are of the highest mind.
Got it.
So I think her
Wait, sorry. Did we see Charloris smashing the Connell's pearl?
I don't know if she smashes the Connell's pearl, but she does retrieve it.
Yeah. So what did she do with it? Yeah, she retrieves it and then gets blown up in that car. Are we led to believe she destroyed that or it was destroyed in the blaze?
I would assume that when she says, I decided to consolidate our affairs, that was her way of saying, because she says our affairs, and the affairs they have in common are that they're all copies of the same person.
I like
that. So that was how I interpreted that. And I think this was already her plan. I think she intended to run off with her family and then still do all this. And her blowing up in the car was just a setback that then was like, okay, well, now I've shed my last weakness, so I can really go full sicko mode into this plan.
I like it.
That makes sense.
So Caleb runs to go to Insight, and Dolores stays behind to fight off some people. She does that, makes her way onto a cement bridge thingy where she encounters Maeve, as well as an absurdly large amount of police officers who she extremely easily takes care of. What a Clone Wars, Stormtrooper? What are they called in Star Wars? Stormtroopers, right?
These are the ones that have no aim?
Yeah. These guys had no aim. Riot police... There's like 18 of them, and she just kills all of them.
Also, James Bond henchmen have this problem, too.
Yeah, it's...
I was about to say that.
That was absurd to me, but she kills all of them. And Maeve says an important line here before that happens, when Dolores is standing in between Maeve and the riot police. She says, if you want me to trust you, let me inside your mind, or I can force my way in. Dolores does, at the end of the episode, let Maeve inside her mind, and it makes a huge difference and results in one of the best, most touching scenes of the season and possibly series, which we discussed earlier. And I think it's interesting that Maeve, like, hey, just let me on in. And then she let her in, and then it all worked out for Dolores and Maeve, right? Like, I guess Maeve did make it hard for Dolores to do this earlier by repeatedly telling her she could never trust her. But, like, damn, if Maeve just, like, kind of trusted Dolores a little, they could have really solved this a lot earlier in the season, huh?
Yeah, but it wouldn't have made a very interesting show, would it?
Nope, not at all. Dolores says an awful line here that we discussed earlier about her being built Ford tough, which Ross and I expertly determined was a Dr. Ford reference, and I think we're going to be winning a Pulitzer Prize for that take.
It's pretty likely.
I'm excited for that. By the way, Maeve drops a French word here, abattoir, which is slaughterhouse, if you're wondering. I believe Maeve is saying Dolores is leading humans to an abattoir, or as the French correctly pronounce it, Abattoir.
That's what they called my dorm room in college.
Oh, shit.
Damn. I have it written in my notes. Someone is going to have to tell Ross what this word means. Literally, it's in there.
Oh, abattoir?
Abattoir.
Yeah.
I have a question. How does Charloris execute her complete disabling of Dolores' body here?
This is something I think happened when she was leaving Delos. Because she said, you put me in charge of Delos and took methods to control me, like I ensured that I could do the same. And the only time it would have made sense that we saw on camera would have been when she's scrambling to leave Delos, because she has at that point already kind of really diverged from who she was supposed to be. And so I assumed a lot of things happened in that scene that we weren't quite aware of at the time. And it's one of the things I was planning to revisit between now and analysis mode to see if I could glean anything.
I was wondering if it was her pulling strings, like using the access she got in Delos headquarters, or possibly in Delos, Dubai, pulling strings. Like, if she's already posted up in Delos, Dubai, and doing all this, because we know she's a hologram, she's somewhere else. That was confusing to me. And a tangent. The first time we see Dubai in season 3 is in the post-credit scene. The first thing we saw from season 3 was the Dubai skyline on the season 3 poster. What the hell is the deal with the season 3 poster? Nothing on it had anything to do with season 3.
Dubai was lit.
Dubai was lit. That's a great viral video. But for real, what's the deal?
You know my answer though.
That poster, besides Free Will Is Not Free, that poster had absolutely nothing to do with the start of the season through the credits of episode 10. You have to go after the credits of episode 10 to get any meaning for this poster that we saw before the season even started. I am irate.
It's a little concerned.
I mean, it's a show that's notorious for red herrings. This was less egregious, but I will never forget that gif that got dropped of them like flipping through all Dolores's paintings, and I had so many analyses.
Oh my God, you had so many.
I had so many takes. I didn't, because it's still one of my bigger examples of wasted time on this show. Second maybe to reading that book that ended up being not important at all. But
unbelievable.
They just like to intentionally mislead you, especially in the promo, which is why I'm starting to adopt Ross's like method of I'm not watching that, because HBO promos are notoriously misleading.
That's true. This week's episode of FAMF is brought to you by Feel CBD. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Through my rigorous CBD testing regimen, I've determined that Feel's CBD is the best there is for so many reasons, including CBD quality, packaging, shipping, price, branding, and more. Feel's is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep, naturally reducing stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. I use Feel's CBD pretty much every single day of my life because it just makes me feel all around better in just minutes. It's super easy to take. You just place a few drops of Feel's underneath your tongue, and the difference is felt within minutes. It's that easy. Little drop, little feel good. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is very important, and everybody's dose is different. So make sure that you're leaving room to experiment over the course of like a week or so. You may need to take more, you may need to take less. It just depends on how your body reacts to it. And luckily, they have real human support to help you out with things like dosage. They actually have a CBD hotline, which is much like the Freeze the Motor Functions cold line, except it's for CBD, to help guide your personal experience. Feels works with nature, naturally, to help you feel better. There's no high, there's no hangover, and there's no addiction. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered directly to your door every single month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel anytime. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and they can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/freeze, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/freeze to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. I've placed a link to this in the description of this episode. Thank you, Feels, for sponsoring the show. Time to get back into it. There is a lot of Dolores-backed rioting going on in LA, and Giggles and Ash are in on the action. Did you guys like the aesthetic that they went with for the rioters? It's like Borderlands meets Mad Max meets Oakland Steampunk Festival.
That's pretty spot on.
Thank you. I thought it was a decent aesthetic. I think in the like after the episode, they said they were going for like kind of Burning Man, which I can see too. But there weren't near enough like douchey tech bros that I saw to make it Burning Man-y. Now, that's like all I assume about Burning Man, is it's just like a hipster douchey tech bros trying to like go and do hipster stuff.
Oh man, I can't wait like for you to get attacked by, you're going to get attacked by all the burners out there.
No, I have no, I'm saying that's how I perceive it to be. I'm sure there's a lot of people who take it seriously, but like the people I have seen go, that's kind of how it is.
Burners, burners are coming
so
for your
fast,
ass, dude.
He does not want that heat.
Burners are coming
I don't
for your
want
ass,
the heat.
Bro.
No, the burners, don't come for me, burners. Please,
set
I don't
this
want
man
your
on
burning
fire.
Heat.
At your next Burning Man, put Jared on top of the pile.
Don't light me an effigy.
Light him up.
I almost... Light him up, up, up. I'm on fire. I'm not ever going to quote Fall Out Boy again on this show. I almost couldn't fall asleep last night until I convinced myself that Giggles did not die due to his heroic efforts. I think we can all agree, we'd rather see Caleb undergo 100 horrendous, painful, gruesome, before his time deaths, than see Giggles die peacefully in his sleep at the age of 105.
Jesus, really? That many times for Caleb?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's just how I feel.
Seeing Marshawn run through a motherfucker's face was great.
And he was like doing that football drill where you like run into the padded thing and he like knocked over a barrack. It was amazing. Giggles, incredible character, great redeeming quality of this season, which is funny because it was like originally meant to be a funny little gimmicky cameo and it turned into one of the best parts of the whole season for me.
It's not good for them.
It's not, but it's great for us because we got Marshawn. And then Caleb follows up Giggles dying for him, possibly, by getting intercepted by Piano Wire, Bitch Boy, and Maeve like an idiot. I will say, he made it far. He got pretty close to uploading the thing. I still feel like maybe he could have uploaded it quickly before Piano Wire, Bitch Boy, Piano Wired his throat, but still not great for Caleb.
He did take out Piano Wire, Bitch Boy. He just didn't make it past Maeve, and she was like, nobody messes with the big ball, darling. Like, okay. Thank you for all the prostitute callbacks.
You know, I'll say this. Caleb did not take out Piano Wire, Bitch Boy. The floor took out Piano Wire, Bitch Boy. Caleb merely assisted the floor.
Jared is president of the Caleb Hate Club.
He's just a little cuck. He's like Liam. They're both cuck boys. That's just how I see it, okay?
I'm with you. I feel like you weren't super hard on him. And then this episode, he did very little to redeem himself. And you were just like, fuck it. I can't. Like, I kept hoping that this guy was going to be better and he wasn't. And you're just so angry about it.
And it's good. It's good because this guy I hate, he doesn't have a very important role in season 4. He just leads humanity.
The truth shall set you free, Jared.
So I'm excited. I'm excited that we're not going to see much more Caleb in his role of Jesus.
By the way,
of humans.
I guess we'll just get it out of the way now. I am a prophet.
Really?
Yeah.
Like Marcus Lemonis prophet, or like?
Like the kind of guy who says, goes out on a massive limb and says that Caleb is being handed the keys to Westworld.
That's true. I thought you were being an idiot. I was like, Ross.
I know. I think you literally called me an idiot.
They're not going to let Aaron Paul get the keys. I don't know if he has the keys, but he's in the driver's seat.
Hey, Bowling Media interns who are listening, could you go back and make a video of the part where Jared says that I'm an idiot for that and then play the part where we see that happen somehow? Thank you.
No, nobody's going to do that.
Not you, Serena.
I guarantee nobody's going to do that. And now
it's
time
for us. Jared. Watch this.
Oh, what's he?
They're going to do it. I'm telling you, this time next week, the video we just spoke on, you'll see it on social media.
So, do we have anything more to say about the Bernard-Lauren scene? Because the biggest thing I took away from it is just the best use of makeup prosthetics in the history of television. I legitimately was like, wow, that old lady's a really good actor.
That is an absurd take. An absolutely egregious take, sir. Routinely, we see people transformed in incredible ways through prosthetics and makeup. Season 2, 3 of True Detective was like fucking Mahershala Ali went back and forth every 5 minutes between being 70 fucking years old and 35 years old and also 20 years old.
Spoiler alert.
It's not a spoiler. Serena, your take.
Oh no, I was just going to say they did the same thing in season 1. I didn't even recognize Matthew McConaughey the first time I watched True Detective. But it was
a spoiler.
Sorry. We are no longer a spoiler-free podcast, Jared.
Oh, shit. So the one thing I do want to go back to that we didn't really touch on is that, so Lauren is both Arnold's either ex-wife
Christ.
Or widow, unclear.
Lauren.
And Bernard's ex-wife / widow. Lauren looks the same, and like in Bernard's eyes, this is actually the woman he believed to be his wife, which is insane.
As Arnold.
I mean, why is that insane? I think Arnold supposedly just like never died because he was like recreated. I don't know. Actually, now I'm
saying, if you're Bernard, imagine looking at this woman who looks exactly like your wife. You believe it to be your wife. She's talking about the love she shares for your child, but it's actually a totally different dude. It's a guy you were based on. But like,
yeah, but we just watched with Charlotte Hale how that plays out situationally when you're put somewhere where then the circumstances affect you or whatever. And in that case, I think you argued for it.
Well, and especially remember how we talk, or we didn't really talk about it, but in season two, they talked about how when you're making like a human version of a host, there's like a defining moment. Like with James Delos, the reason, yep, like he would always come back to the defining moment where he like told Logan to fuck off.
This is the cornerstone.
And then like, yeah, the cornerstone. I feel like Bernard's cornerstone was losing his son. So yep, that was always, whereas like Charlotte developed, or Charloris developed caring about her family, Bernard was built with it.
Yep, I like that. So meanwhile, Dolores has been hooked up to Rehoboam in the presence of Serac and Maeve. As a means of torture, Serac begins deleting Dolores' memories one by one, in a way destroying her as a sentient being. Because, you know, what are you without your memories? I believe Vincent Cassell says that after the episode's over. After intercepting Maeve, she re-emphasizes that she is working with Serac.
An Alzheimer's reference if you wanted to tie that into your grand scheme of things. Because what are you without your memories? And Alzheimer's takes away your memory.
It's true. That's true. After intercepting Caleb, sorry, I had that written wrong in my notes, Maeve re-emphasizes that she is working with Serac because he offered her access to her daughter. And I still can't believe this is what drives Maeve. We've talked about this all season. We're like, oh, there's got to be some other thing driving Maeve, right? Nope.
And then at the end, he was like, what was that thing you couldn't live without? She was like, my daughter, but meh, I'll get to it eventually. Yeah. Like, okay.
The fact that they brought it back up was a little insulting.
Oh, we're going to clear up the loose end for all the viewers out there. They've been wondering all season long, and now let's put it up for them. Here it is. Come on.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that compelling in season one.
And it was never compelling. That's the point. That's why it's so fucking bizarre that they're still trying to run with it in season three. And did they go out of their way to remind us it didn't matter in the finale? Why did they even fucking remind us? What the fuck?
Very savage. When Caleb meets Serac, Serac shows Caleb that Dolores has been using him as a pawn all along, and he's not actually a savior, but a murderer, as Dolores was actually having him unwillingly kill all humans, Bender style. We obviously find out later this is not the case, this is not Dolores' plan, so I asked you to this last night, you both ignored it, so fuck you, I'm asking you it again now on the pod. Do you think Dolores' plan led to the end of the world? Because literally all plans eventually led to the end of the world, as we saw throughout this season. Serac's just out here, like, on the fly. Oh, that's going to be the end of the world. Got to change it. Oh, my God. This is the end of the world. Like, every plan that we've seen eventually leads to the end of the world if Serac doesn't intervene. So this is just another case. Serac hasn't intervened yet. I'm sure if Dolores' plan had gone into play with, like, normal circumstances, Serac might have been able to change it. I don't know. But that's what I think happened. It's clearly not Dolores' plan like Serac is presenting it. To kill all humans. We know that that's not her motivation. So what do you guys think?
I think Bernard says it exactly. And I actually am looking back at our text. I had meant to say this last night, but we were rapid firing about so many things that I think it slipped my mind. Bernard says at the end, this was happening eventually. What Serac and his brother were doing were just putting it off. So all Dolores, and that's why he got on the same page as her, because he was like, oh, she wasn't trying to destroy civilization. Civilization was going to destroy itself. Then he says, like, we had to burn down our world to build a new one. Like, Dolores was trying to do the same thing.
Perfect. That is the exact bow I needed this tied into. Bang. We quickly see a scene of a lot of dead protesters and a very sad-looking Ash. So one might assume Giggles has perished, but I personally will not allow such negative thinking on this podcast. So next up, Maeve realizes that Serac is a total shill henchman nobody loser. This made me sad. Kind of ruined Serac for me.
Didn't you say now if they we did know this, you would set the world on fire?
No, I think I said as much, because this ruins Serac for me.
Your lack of anger... So set your truth free, Jared. Live your truth, Jared.
I'm just saying, I'm pissed because I love Serac. Unbelievable character. They built him up so well, and now we find out he's just the human mouth for Rehoboam. He's wearing an earring. He's wearing a goddamn earring.
Serena, didn't you kind of predict this, though, that it was, or somebody at one point brought up, like, that it's possible we end up seeing a situation where like his brother's consciousness lived on in this god computer, and the other computer was Serac.
Yeah, but it's not. It's Rehoboam, and Rehoboam's using Serac as his little bitch boy.
So how did he get into that position where it had him wearing the earpiece and was controlling him? So the takeaway for me was essentially he built this computer. It was in an effort to keep humanity from destroying itself, which is in Westworld's opinion, an inevitability, which is the least shocking thing of all time, by the way. This show continues to have below zero opinion of humanity. And again, it's almost like it was made for the AI among us to watch and enjoy and not actual humans, which is fucking bizarre. Go ahead.
He made Rehoboam, and then he realized, oh my God, Rehoboam's the only thing that can save the world. So he essentially gave up his own
power
to be the henchman.
I need to listen to this thing. Yeah.
Another way he thinks he's noble. Oh my God, I'm giving up my life and giving up what he didn't want to banish his brother, but the system told him to. So he did it. He thinks he's a martyr. He thinks he's giving up his life for the good of humanity by listening to Rehoboam when really he's just a bitch boy.
Yeah, the fact that they could never find a path that didn't result in the apocalypse
Yeah. Just putting out fires. That's all he's doing.
Yes.
He's the fireman of a fireman. And something about hosing down.
Fireman coming.
So, yeah, kind of pissed about the whole Serac thing. I'm not that mad. I'm just kidding. I'm irate again. I've been irate twice this episode. It's pretty clear in this scene that Maeve is getting fed up with Serac and priming herself for a move to the Dolores side. In the next scene, we see Maeve getting fed up with how slowly everything's moving with getting the memories out of Dolores. And Maeve's like, let me do this. So Maeve touches Dolores' hand. And I very, very, very strongly believe that this hand touch is when when the scene of Dolores and Maeve in the simulation in the field plays out, right? Their hands touch. We know that the simulation runs faster than the real world, and we see Dolores say the beauty during the short amount of time their hands are touching, and immediately after they hold hands, Maeve's like, oh, there's nothing in there. Dolores is just alone in a field, which she would only know from seeing it for herself. So this all seems to point to the answer to the question of how did Maeve and Dolores make contact? When they touched hands, all of that scene we saw happened in the course of like 5 seconds. And that, friends, is what happened. Confirmed. Did you guys go on, Serena?
No, I was going to say, I think you hit the nail on the head, because when we saw the scene and then they kept cutting back to Caleb, I was like, how long has Caleb just been here being like, So,
yeah, right.
So is that the Valley Beyond?
No. That was just a simulation. That was Dolores's like final memory that was involved with, which we'll talk about again in a second, because I think a lot of people were confused with how Dolores actually took down Rehoboam. So I'll just jump into it right now. So here's what I believe happened. Dolores's final memory was, you know, it involved two things. It involved her in that field kind of waiting for Maeve, waiting for somebody who could, you know, finalize her like mission while she's about to die. And also, I believe Dolores made a copy of the flash drive that Solomon gave to Caleb and uploaded that into her own brain and made it her final memory, her like cornerstone in a way, so that she could have another way to take the system down. She knew Serac very well. She had Serac pegged. She knew he wanted the Sector 16 data so badly that what he would do eventually is hook her up to Rehoboam to find it, because that's like the last ditch effort. It's like, you can't get it out of Caleb. You can't get it out of, you know, of her herself. You're going to have to get it out of her by sticking her up to Rehoboam. Dolores knew this, and so she knew that she could use herself as a Trojan horse and put the Solomon data inside Rehoboam. When she does that, it allows control of Rehoboam to be taken away from Serac and given to Caleb. That's what Solomon set up. He set up this system to where, okay, we can put this information in Rehoboam. It'll take all the access away from Serac, like Serac did to Liam Sr. and Liam Jr. And it will give that to Caleb, who then has the choice Dolores brought up earlier in the episode, that the choice that he has for humans, which is either he can be the emperor of humans, he can be the runner of humanity, just like Serac was, or he can have the system destroy itself and make it so that humans themselves have a right to choose, and there's nobody longer in charge of their story.
and he's going to lead them into the next season.
Yes. But no, he's not actually, because now they're all on their own paths. He destroyed the system. Do you guys have thoughts on that? I just rambled big time, big ramble.
I like it. I think if I had anything to add to it, it would just be tangential. And I think you encapsulated the important parts of it all.
So going back to the actual like story that happens, Serac tries to get info out of Caleb, realizes that's pointless, orders for him to be killed, has Dolores' brain erased, which causes the Rehoboam takeover by Solomon / Dolores / Caleb. And when Maeve, we it seems like she has that simulation going on when she's like standing away from Dolores, but we know that that just happened earlier. And she's kind of just like thinking about it. She gets out of her thought and she's already stabbed a dude. And then there's the darkened fight scene that had people up in arms. I liked it. I was like, this is cinematically beautiful. It's a nice callback to Bernard in the Mesa Hub control room. I enjoyed it. Some people were like, that's a way to get out of making a scene. What did you guys think?
I shared your take, Jared, because the show has not been shy about what it can or is willing to do in terms of animatronics, animation, VFX. Like, I think... like, yeah, you can say it's that, but I think if I just don't think it's fitting.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought halfway through, but I kind of agree with you. I thought it was more symbolic than like, oh, let's cheat the viewers out of this.
Yeah, it didn't strike me as a moment being taken from me, really.
So Cuck Serac tries to get Rehoboam to call the police, but Rehoboam answers to Caleb now because Dolores made Solomon's access her final memory, which corrupted the system, as I spoke to. Caleb has the choice, decides to make the humans free, then why don't they kill Serac? That bugged me. Wouldn't they have killed Serac?
Wait, why?
Or do they think Serac is worthless now? Do they think he has nothing going for him now?
He does have nothing going for him now.
Yeah, but like he's still kind of dangerous. He has a lot of information on everybody.
All that information just got destroyed. Didn't it?
In his brain, though.
He was like, I thought he did a good job of sort of revealing himself as like this sniveling, worthless, not strong person. Once we saw the earpiece, he kind of fell back. And I thought that actor did good job of showing that. Like he only seemed strong. He was not.
Yeah. This whole episode, he really didn't seem that powerful. Like he really seemed like he was taking a back step. I mean, that was intentional, obviously. It was like the kind of fall of Serac, but I was weird to me that they wouldn't kill him. Like why would, like this dude just is the biggest villain in humanity's history.
I think because, I mean, two reasons. Like everyone, if people know who he is or find out, they're going to kill him anyway. And then the second reason would be, there's this whole theme of like, what's the point of surviving if we become just as bad as they are and all that stuff. If the roles were reversed, he would have killed them. And I think their whole point is diverging from everything that Serac wanted the world to be and everything he was. So I think they were like, he can't fucking do anything. He doesn't have the system anymore. And even if he like tells people about it, he's going to either reveal who he is and be publicly hated or sound like a crazy person. Like killing him doesn't really land them anywhere.
I like that. You know what else I like? Mack Weldon. Another ad read, baby. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. And I mean it. Go browse their website, mackweldon.com, and you'll notice it is significantly more easy to browse and purchase on than other companies' websites. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. They've got a wide array of amazing products, including a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. And the silver in this line, Ross, is worth its weight in silver because it actually is silver, a naturally antimicrobial substance. Very interesting that they're putting this I believe it's in the underwear and the shirts.
I love silver.
Exactly. Very state of the art. Mack Weldon really does value its loyal customers as well. That's why they've created the Weldon Blue Loyalty Program. Here's how it works. You create an account, which is totally free. Level 1, you place an order for any amount, and you never pay for shipping again. Level 2, once you purchase $200 worth of products from Mack Weldon, not only will you continue to receive free shipping, but you will also start saving 20% on every order you make for the next year. Absurd. And level 2 also grants you access to new products before they are ever released to anyone else, as well as free gifts added to future orders. They really treat their customers super well. The Mack Weldon product I currently want the most are the boxer briefs. I was late to the boxer brief game and am only just now catching up. And Mack Weldon's boxer briefs are well known for being incredibly comfortable and breathable, as well as easy to buy on their super easy to use website. Ross, they say disc golfing in Mack Weldon shaves 3 strokes off your game immediately, and then even more after that. That's an entire hole immediately taken off my score. We're talking exponential improvement here. I need to get in on this. The craziest thing about this all, Ross, is Mack Weldon's guarantee. It is literally almost unbelievable. All Mack Weldon wants is for you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they will still refund you. No questions asked. You have literally nothing to lose when you shop Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter promo code FREEZE. That is 20% off your first order at MackWeldon.com, MackWeldon.com with promo code FREEZE. Let's get back into it. Bernard sticks Stubbs in an icy bath with little bottles of vodka like he's about to harvest his robo-kidneys. That was interesting. And it's like, dude, why would you even put him in this icy bath if you're about to leave him for like an extended period of time to the point where you're covered in dust afterwards?
An extended period of time?
Yeah, he goes to the Valley Beyond, and by the time he wakes up, he's covered in dust from an apocalypse.
Stubbs still in that tub?
Yes.
I mean, Ashley Tubbs. Gone?
We got Ashley Tubbs now.
I have that too.
Ashley Tubbs. So it's like, dude, by putting him in the ice bath, you're just prolonging his death. You're like, it's like torturous to a degree. So got to imagine he's dead, but maybe he's not.
Maybe he's just bleeding out. I think that Bernard didn't know how long he was going to be in there for. I think he was like, oh, like I'm going to go ask a quick question. And then I think the system put him to sleep. And then he wakes up at the end. I have thoughts on that later, but I don't think his intention was to be in there for like until the end of the world. Cause he's like, I don't have much time till the apocalypse, which to me indicates that he had an intention to like come back out and make some kind of move.
It's also possible that there was like a big bomb that went off and he's covered in dust and it was really the same day, you know, like it could have been covered
in
dust.
Cause the plant in his motel room is dead at the end.
But wouldn't a nuclear disaster just kill a plant?
Yeah, but the room was still intact. So, like, if it had been an explosion big enough that it was nuclear dust, I would assume everything around him would have been in shambles, but everything was intact except he was covered in a thick layer of dust and the plant behind him was dead. And it was a succulent. Those shits are hard to kill.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah, Bernard casually mentions to Stubbs that the entire world is about to go through a reckoning and burn down so humans can atone for their sins. Just a casual apocalypse, you know, the robots went through it, humans will be fine. Bernard's very like, it's a reckoning, but yeah, it's whatever, they need it. It'll do them some good. He's very casual about this apocalypse, I found. And Bernard says all this before saying he must find an answer to what comes after the end of the world, which is why he searches in the Valley Beyond for that answer, which is in his head, and putting on the teleporter goggles takes him to the Valley Beyond. Serena, go on.
Oh, this is just my moment where I get to say I was right. Ross got to have his.
Oh.
You haven't had your moment of gloat yet, so this is mine.
I got mine.
What were you right about? Will you explain?
I said that the key to the Valley Beyond was in Bernard because I saw it happen and the finale of episode or season 2 finale, the key that originally opens the Valley Beyond, the access key says it has Bernard's picture on it. So I was like, oh, it was never in Dolores to begin with. And that's what I went through the last episode thinking. And then at the end, he said it was never in her mind. It was always
so
in mine.
Why does he go to the Valley Beyond?
Yeah. Who's he going to talk to there? What's the deal here?
I mean, there could be lots of people. We have to think about who went to the Valley Beyond. For some reason, like, it's probably just wishful thinking, but Akichita was the first person I thought of because he is someone that achieved a lot of enlightenment through, like, roaming around the park and then went into the Valley Beyond. But he's definitely in there talking to someone. And I'm pretty sure...
He says, figure out what comes after the end of the world.
Huh.
To what he says.
I feel like, man, that's interesting. Because it can't be some like side ass character. It has to be like Ford or something.
Could be Ford. Could be Arnold.
Huh. I wonder if we get that next season because it was such a big, cool scene, the reveal that he had been there for long enough to accumulate that much dust. You know, but you never know.
Back, world. We've been podcasting so long. Remember back when we used to call him Bernarnold?
No, I literally don't. That's how long ago it was.
It was a long time ago. It was years ago. So the episode ends with Maeve and Caleb. Wait. What?
No, sorry. Go ahead. Never mind. Don't wait.
The episode ends with Maeve and Caleb looking out over the beginning of the apocalypse with big explosions possibly being perpetrated by El Lazo, who we have to see in season 4 now because he didn't die. That's tight. Love that. And that's it for the season finale. Oh, wait. It's time for the most egregious post-credit scene in the history of the world. Two post-credit scenes. I clocked it at about 35 minutes long. This was insane. I think during the credits, everybody was like, wait, what about the Man in Black? And we all knew it was coming. Did not expect the length or the craziness of what transpired. Let's just start talking about it because I need some help here. Man in Black goes to Delos, Dubai in an absolute tizzy while just spouting insanities to anyone who isn't listening, killing people, making his way to a research lab where he finds Char Loris. And Serena, you had a great theory behind what the relationship is between Man in Black and Char Loris. Because she's like, oh, you're right on time, William. She was clearly planning for his arrival. What was your theory, Serena?
I had two. One goes back to this season 2, episode 10, which if anyone out there, if you're confused, if there's one episode I would say you should rewatch, watch that one because it helped me a lot. But there's that line where Logan, who represents the system, says, humans are deceptively simple. Once you know them, their behavior is quite predictable. So it could just be that, like, she's able to predict his behavior because Dolores knows the Man in Black, and that is the original Pearl that's in Charlotte. That would be the most straightforward answer, but it could also be the tracking protein in his blood. But my crackpot theory about it all is that, okay, she stole all that data when she left Delos, which was maybe in their computer. I know Jared thinks that it wouldn't have been stored in the computer.
I just think the Man in Black was so careful that nobody would ever find out about it. He wouldn't put it in a public Delos computer. I just can't see it.
But it wasn't in a public Delos computer. It was in her office.
Anything, it would never be allowed on the Delos headquarters campus, in my opinion.
I mean, I can't say that, like, I don't see what you're getting at. I just don't see, like, there's so many explanations, but then they're also limited by, like, what we've already seen. So every time I'd come up with one, I'd run into something. I definitely think what you're saying is very valid. I just, like, in order to make it work in my head, it was like it could have been on that computer when she was stealing all that data and she dropped it. She could have dropped it onto him and been using him somehow. But then I was like, does that mean he's a host? I don't know. The other thing she could have done is she dropped it onto that recipient server, which ended up being Solomon. And we did see when we see Solomon at the beginning of the episode that it says it's running on reserve power. So there would still be a way for her to infiltrate that system and extract whatever data she uploaded into it. But she definitely needs the Sector 16 data because not only has she perfected the whole making humans to hosts thing, but she also has the host creation data. But then it's like, didn't she already have the host creation data because she copied herself? I don't know.
Yes. So many things up in the air right now. You know, Char Loris says to Man in Black, you're right, William, you are going to save the world for us. I kind of read this as William is going to save the world for the hosts by providing Charlotte with the host's creation data so she can execute on her plan. We see that she has the capacity to build a large robot army. So maybe this Char Loris is going to execute the plan we thought Dolores was going to execute on, which is build a robot army of hosts to take over the world. Kind of seems like that to me. And this also brings me into asking, so season 4, is it now Maeve, Caleb, Bernard, and Dolores versus Man in Black and Char Loris and whoever else Char Loris makes? What's the deal?
Yeah, maybe. I like your theory, your thought that Jared Lewis is going to create a robot army, and we go full Terminator at some point here.
It's what it seems like.
I mean, if they didn't sprinkle enough breadcrumbs to let you know they're going full Terminator at some point, then I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I was wondering too is, do we think that that's why Bernard wakes up, either to stop that from happening, or because couldn't you, if the host's consciousnesses are uploaded into the Valley Beyond, would it not be possible to upload those consciousnesses back onto Pearls and put them back into bodies? And is that going to be a way that they bring back these characters, or is it all, any vision that we see of them, is that all going to take place in the like weird aspect ratio Valley Beyond kind of thing?
I think it makes sense that you'd be able to download people back out of the Valley Beyond, but they kind of made it sound like it was a forever place. Like once you make it there, you can't be taken out of it. I think maybe my brain tells me it can be destroyed, but you can't edit it. You can add people in, but you can't take people out. That's kind of just how I feel about it.
I would think that for the average person, and I think that's why Dolores didn't trust herself with the Valley Beyond, because I think if you have the encryption key, this is a crackpot theory totally, but I would think if you have that encryption key, you can take things off of it. And maybe the reason Dolores didn't trust herself with that access is like, well, she might have done exactly that. She might have made a host army and done things that in her poetic sensibility she would have deemed evil. So she put it in Bernard, who is far more sensible than even she is. But I'm wondering if you have that access key, if you can't. But it wouldn't be like any person could go in there and do it.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out in 1.5 years. The scene closes.
Two.
Yeah, two.
I can almost guarantee we won't.
The scene plays out with some more William-on-William violence like we saw earlier in the season. Except this time, Man in Black gets his throat slashed by himself.
This was tight.
Not expected. But there we go. There's Man in Black's redemption arc. If you ever wondered how it played out this season, got his throat slashed by himself. So that's
he was the hero, that, Jared. Serena. He was the hero.
He was the good guy. He was the good
not
guy.
Not the good guy we needed, but the good guy we got.
It also tied together the season one post-credit scene. Or season two, sorry. With all that fidelity testing done by his daughter, where Lisa Joy said it takes place in the way distant future. This was that way distant future.
It didn't seem that far distant, though. It only seemed like a matter of months in the future. Because William looks the same.
I guess that's a really good point.
However,
never mind. I retract my statement.
No, I think Lisa Joy could have been just misleading people, because it would make a lot of sense that that's part of the fidelity testing that Charloris was putting Man in Black through to get the Man in Black that we see that kills William in this scene. I like this a lot.
Because his cornerstone was Emily, so it would make sense that, like, his cornerstone will always be the moment where he kills Emily, so it would make sense that Emily also does the whole parent to child, like, William tested Jim and Emily would test William.
And we see that the forge in the post-credit scene is covered in sand, which Dubai has a lot of sand, which also ties it into the season 3 poster.
So you think season 3 was all about season 4, as like just like season 2 was all about getting to season 3?
Yes. It's all a cliffhanger.
I really thought Ross was about to say you think season 3 was all about sand.
You know, that's how they make glass. Just figured I'd drop that fact on you guys. Finally, after a heavy dusting, Bernard wakes up from his Valley Beyond slumber. And that, folks, is season 3 of Westworld.
This is the show you want to get cast on, man. You can't be killed off.
No. Yeah, like, oh my God, Dolores died. Oh my God, Man in Black died. Both in this episode. We're going to see them immediately once season 4 starts. Like, this is insane.
Yeah, and when push came to shove, push comes to shove, that's the thing that's the place Westworld has lost me. It's still this season as a whole. If you put it up against like anything else on TV, it can hold its weight. Visually, it was unbelievable. The acting is incredible for the most part. Sans some Aaron Paul slips.
Did you say sand?
Sansa. But But in terms of storyline, it wasn't good. And I don't think anybody should I don't think you could look at this the way this unfolded from episode 1 through 8 and tell me that there was like a cohesive good storyline that you were stoked about the way it unfolded. I don't think anybody could do that because I don't think it happened. But what concerns me, really concerns me, is how even all said and done, watching that post-credit scene, and this is one of the things I talked to my dad about, I was like, I found myself wanting to watch season 4, which is infuriating because they fucked us here. Like, for the most part, they kind of choked. If season 2 was sort of a stepping stone to get to this place where we could get out of the park and bring in Aaron Paul and build this world out, it feels like we got sort of like a silly ass version of that, right? Was it really fun to watch? Hell yeah. Were there incredible scenes completely lacking in logic? Yes. And that's sort of what Westworld seems to be now. Like, it's going to be like that. Like, we're not going to be able to find logic in everything that happens in season 4, just like we couldn't in season 3, just like we couldn't in season 2. And I think as an audience, we sort of have to abandon that aspect of it. Like, the trying to make everything fit of it isn't as much fun to me as the, like, what does this mean for these characters or these humans or whatever. And that stuff that we get into, I love. It's the, like, trying to fill in the gaps for the showrunners and their writing staff has become a wearisome task.
You think you should be getting paid for it?
No, because I don't try to do it anymore. I gave up. But y'all should be getting paid.
Okay,
HBO,
well,
cut the check.
Cut the check. Season 3, you know, there's been a lot of dissent, a lot of love. Westworld's the kind of show that has polarizing fans. You have fans who love it no matter what and trust the writers with their lives and it can do no wrong. You have the fans who love the show but want to see it taken in a direction they're happy with. You have people who love to hate the show who just want to, like, make fun of it so they don't care if it gets better. But all that is to say, at least we got another season of this incredible show. Regardless of how it was definitely not how we all would have written it up to be, probably not all we wanted it to be, but we had a lot of fun analyzing it. There's not another show on television that you can analyze like Westworld. This it doesn't matter about the content sometimes because it's about the idea of the show. How many other shows can you have somebody read a 200-page book on about, like, a small Easter egg hidden in it that actually somehow ties into the story, right? There's little things they do in this show. No, it did tie in to a degree. It just didn't have an impact on this season, but it tied in. It was more so looking back than looking forward. But they do so many little things in this show that are just incredible, and I love it. I love talking about it. Love talking about it with you guys. This is a lot of fun, both my co-hosts and with the audience. I really enjoyed it. Serena, do you have any final parting words here before we get into some announcements?
No, mostly just I really appreciated getting to come on and do this with you. Quarantine has been a weird time. I have been furloughed from my entertainment industry job, and this gave me something to throw myself
into.
It's
not porn. I just want to be clear. That was a joke I made many episodes ago.
I don't think anyone really thought it was porn, Ross.
I just want to make sure nobody ties it back to that time.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm not in the adult film industry. I'm in the regular film and television industry.
Thank you for clarifying.
That's my statement on all that. But I really appreciated getting to come on and talk to you guys about it. Also opened doors for listeners to DM me their theories, which has been really fun for me. So, thank you to everyone, and thank you to
watching
you
guys. Watching you put theories in your crack pipe and smoke them this season has been one of the most fun experiences of my podcasting career. Both of you must do this before we leave. You must objectively rank the season on a scale of 1 to 10. You must. Serena, can you do this? 1 to 10. Can you give it a number? Because you have to go first. If Jared goes first, he'll bias you into a higher number.
Oh, that's kind of true.
I was literally going to say, oh, Jared should go first.
You just wanted him to be able to set the bar for you. You're scared to go out by yourself. If I said it, then it's fucked because everybody knows I'm going low. Doesn't change anything.
I know,
it could be argued you are the non-biased judge of how season three ended up. And now that being said, I don't want you to feel any pressure, but it's pretty much like every hour of podcasting that went into this entire season. It comes down to this and your rating.
Damn, this must have been how Caleb felt when Dolores put the fate of the entire world in his hands and was like, okay, you got to choose. Are you going to end it or are you going to be the leader?
I would also remind you, similarly, you could just unplug your computer and run.
Yeah, but...
That wouldn't be very fun, though, or professional.
I can't. Right. And I would like to be asked back for future episodes. I feel like that would ice me out. Also, it would make a really ugly noise. Mike would scream.
Same reasons Caleb made his decision.
Yeah,
Caleb was definitely worried about yeah, our podcast producer, Mike Moody. He was going to be like, oh, like if I end humanity, Mike's going to be so sad when he watches this. Man, I hope he's laughing. He can hear us. I don't think he can see us.
You're stalling, Serena. Stop stalling.
You're Joseph Stalin right now.
Okay, 6.5.
Okay, 6.5. My dad said 6. Nobody cares. I don't know. I'm sure my dad.
I care.
Dad, I'm sorry.
Steve.
Dad, I'm sorry.
I follow him on Twitter.
I don't
know
if he wanted me to share that. If that's, I've just outed him as a six raider of Westworld season three. And I was a little lower. I was like, I'll say a definitive 4.8 is my score after it. And y'all know why. I don't have to give my reasons again. But that's
I'm a 6.9.
Nice.
You would.
And Jared, I will say you scoring it under 7, I think took a lot of bravery.
Thank you. Thank you.
Not a hero.
Not a hero.
Or a prophet, because we were wrong about everything we thought would happen in this season to a degree that will make me laugh 40 years from now when I listen back to what we predicted.
I don't think we were that wrong about stuff.
We weren't?
No, I think we were pretty wrong.
I think we were
guessed that they were going to bring back Musashi and he was going to be the head of the Yakuza and that he was also going to be Dolores and that Maeve was going to fight him and then you guessed all that shit?
No, but I think we made some decent predictions that ended up playing out better than they... I think we were as right about Westworld as anyone can be about Westworld without consulting Reddit.
Maybe along the way. I agree. Along the way. But like in our predicting like what was going to happen in season three and shit, we were just... It was outrageous.
But we had fun with it. Crackpot theories. If you want more discussion on the season 3 finale, hit up our Patreon at patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions, where we will be dropping another podcast this Thursday, the last one of the season.
Hotline calls, Jared.
Hotline calls. That's only available on our Patreon. In it, we respond to voicemails from patrons, talk theories, and more. We're just going to pretty much talk about the whole season.
It's one of the most fun parts of this whole experience is getting to go back and forth with everybody on Twitter and on Instagram and shit. And Patreon is the finest version of that exchange on patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions where you can support the show. And if you've obviously missed this entire season on Patreon, well, the episodes are still there. We don't delete them. Yeah. So yeah, if you wanted to just jump on and support the show now, you fucking what do we have Thursday though? Actually, you can't. Can you even join now?
You can. So if you join now, you will be charged $10, which gets you access to the entire backlog of content from the entire season. That includes columns, memes, and 7 podcasts, one of which is on video, and includes the infamous Riding Crop incident where I might have given Ross COVID.
Well, we will not know until I'm able to get my antibodies tested, Jared.
It's true. So like Ross said, I mean, if you want to support the show, if you're like, you know what? These guys did a great job. Guys and gal did a great job. I'll toss them $10 and get 7 podcasts.
Hell.
8, including this weekend, this week's
if you're
one.
You're not ready to let go. Why not? Or if you just need more discussion and if you want to hear audience takes on the finale, then that's going to be your place there on Thursday. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you're like, oh my God, Westworld's over. I need some place. Boom, Thursday podcast. Or if you have $10 burning a hole in your pocket. Give it to me, bitch.
I'm also just looking forward to hearing...
I haven't dropped a bitch in a while. It's so fun.
I'm looking forward to hearing... It's very inappropriate, Jared. Please act like an adult. I'm looking forward to hearing what our listeners thought, all said and done, about the season and the way some of their theories and takes played out that were dished out over the course of it.
Me too. Shouts to our best guests on Patreon. Renee, Anthony Turner, Jordan Holmer, Andy Nielsen, Patrick Borgquist, Ray, Ben, The Bucky's Bandit, Day 11 Westworld, Christopher Innes, James Sarno, Matt D'Angelo, James Hunter Warning, Chelsea Newman, and Samuel Patterson. Congrats again on winning the giveaway, Samuel. Thank you all so much. Thank you to all FAMF patrons this season, but especially the best guests. We are honored you guys chose to bless us with your advanced tier patronage this season, and it truly means the world to us to have supportive fans like y'all. That does it for this episode of Freeze All Motor Functions and this season of Freeze All Motor Functions, unless you're a patron. We don't know when we'll see you again, unless you're a patron, in which case it'll be Thursday.
Jared, we had a great time with you this season. I feel like we should end on a song.
Row, row, row your boat.
All right. Well, that's not it. Okay. Yeah. Serena, you got no singing? Okay.
Real human beings and a real hero. It's not Jared though.
How about this? Ready? This is the only way I can finish this season.
Oh yeah, tied all together. It's that fucking do it.
I'm incited, yeah. But dumb.
Yes.
If you've been listening to this whole season, that is just the icing on top. That is from a preseason episode. There was a great music video, music poster posted to our Instagram, and we tied it all together. I'm happy that was able to happen.
It ends where it all began, and it begins in a place that we
time
call
is a flat
them.
Circle.
Exactly.
This is a multiverse, and one of the other ones, Serena is actually the main host. I call in from New York City, and Jared is the co-host.
It's true. We had a great time with you guys this season. We went through a lot together, and it was a wild ride, but all great things must come to an end. Without our voices now, you're free to riot and roam the streets, unfettered by the takes of three morons. You'll come to enjoy this way of life after time, even without the assistance of a mind-altering implant. As Caleb would so eloquently put it, at least this way, you get to decide who you want to be. It's time for the NPR style sign-off.
You're going out, Freeze All Motor Functions. Caleb is perfect.
Freeze All Motor Functions has been brought to you by Bolin Media and hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin and Serena. This show was remotely produced by Mike Moody of Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. Special thanks to Phil from DC, a.k.a. Schnapple, on SoundCloud for our intro music, Brad Hess for our outro music, and Serena, who does insanely awesome Westworld and Freeze All Motor Functions themed memes and Photoshop work you can find on our Twitter at Freeze All Motor, Instagram at Freeze All Motor Functions, and at patreon.com/freezeallmotorfunctions, where you can tune back in Thursday for our more discussion on Season 3, Episode 8, Crisis.
You didn't call
Theory.
Our intern Serena. Our you called the regular Serena. You did it.
I've done that multiple times now, but I like how you are looking for things that are like tying together. It's nice. By the way, Ross, where can people follow you on social?
At WR Bolin.
I'm at Jared Borislow. Serena?
I'm at Serena_Therese, and Sam Patterson hit me up on one of those to tell me what Photoshop you want.
Oh, there you go.
Holler at me on the Rico
Our
app.
Paths. Oh, hit up Ross on the Rico app for show. Our paths will cross again soon. I saw it in your files. Bye, everybody.
Remember.
Freeze all motor functions.